those new spaces that we don't have language for yet, and reimagining them. And I hope that they are not 501c3 nonprofits, and I hope they are not museums that look like the museums we have now, and I hope they are not contemporary art centers that look like the contemporary art centers we have now. I hope that they are things we can't yet visualize.
Well, I wish we had like 10 hours for this podcast. But I want to thank you guys so much for being on here. Is there anything you guys want to plug?
Thank you for having us. Hyka does have a program that I think some listeners might be interested in on February 13th at 2:00 on pykatv.org. We're going to be streaming a free program. It's a panel discussion and readings by writers and poets who are all undocumented folks living in the US. And the topic is going to be around mental health. And it's guest curated by a poet based in California named Yosimar Reyes, and Yosimar is going to be hosting it. And it's at 2 p.m. Pacific time on Saturday, February 13th on pykatv.org.
We have a YouTube channel that we're launching, which we're extremely excited about. So all previous episodes will now be available on YouTube, and you can check out our show page at kboo.fm/program/art-talk-bus-stop if you want to find the link to the YouTube channel. Roya and Roshni, thank you so much for being with us. It's been such a pleasure.
Yeah, and I just want to thank both of you, all of you, everybody, for this great conversation.
Yes, thank you for having us.
And welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience produced at a different location every week. Hey, I'm Nick Espinoza of the Deep Dive Radio Show, where we talk about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, broadcasting out of the Chicagoland area on WHIW 101.3 FM. And we have a great show today on Sprouts. I'm going to be interviewing Congresswoman Robin Kelly on her new IoT security law that President Trump signed, and also about President Trump firing the head of the cybersecurity wing of the Department of Homeland Security. You don't want to miss this, but first, let's start with the worst breaches of 2020. I actually wanted to do a retrospective on 2020 and talk about the worst data breaches of 2020, as we had just a ton due to COVID and everything else. I did the same thing at the beginning of 2020, though, obviously not knowing where 2020 was going to take us for 2019. So hopefully we can take a look back here at some of the worst breaches, not necessarily by record size, but by publicity, by disaster, by impact to humans. Some of them have massive records, some don't. But I think that these are the worst. And I'm hoping that we can learn from these mistakes and continue to make ourselves even more secure in 2021. And so with that, let's start in January with Estee Lauder. This is the cosmetic giant. They actually had 444 million records exposed. We're talking user emails, internal documents, and more, thanks to a phishing scam. That was obviously a huge, huge problem that they had. Moving on, there was a company called KeepNet Labs. They're based out of the UK. They're a security company, which makes it that much more worse because they should be more secure than pretty much everybody on the planet as they are keeping their records. They also had a leaky database, in this case, an Elasticsearch database that exposed 5 billion records. We're talking passwords, some in plain text, some not, emails, and more. So obviously a huge, huge problem. And we saw billions and billions and billions of records exposed in 2020. We're getting there. And at the end of this segment, and then my next segment, the deep dive will show you, this was the year of the hacker. It was absolutely bonkers. Moving on, keeping in March, we're going to be talking about a company called Whisper. Now, I found this one to be really interesting because Whisper advertised themselves as, quote, the safest place on the internet. And you know where I'm going with this. Now, they're a secret sharing app, meaning you could download the app and then share secrets among yourself and somebody else. They were running an unprotected database that had over 900 million personally identifiable records. And I think what makes this worse, even though it's not billions of records, 900 million, don't get me wrong, is nothing to slouch at, is that the fact that they advertise themselves as a safe place to share secrets, That PII information that got out is even more damning because, quite frankly, it could expose secrets of people. That was a huge, huge issue. Moving on in May, we have to talk about Blackbaud. Now, this was, until recently, and I'll get to it, the worst data breach of 2020. Hands down, it dwarfed everybody until it didn't. Now, Blackbaud is a fundraising management for nonprofits, foundations, schools, and on and on and on. You've heard me in my breaches segment talk about essentially those companies and organizations that were disclosing that they got breached thanks to Blackbaud, and there were hundreds of those that I went through week by week. I just had one in my last breaches video, the very first video of 2020, first breaches of the week video, also with a Blackbaud disclosure. So it's still ongoing, and this happened in May. They got hit with ransomware and exposed personally identifiable information, and as I mentioned, hundreds of disclosures from hundreds of companies and organizations, and a ton of lawsuits have been filed against Blackbaud as well. So we're going to see where that goes, but Blackbaud obviously in some serious trouble. They are the number two data breach of the year, and I was just shocked to see them move to number two, but time is time. Moving on, let's go to June and talk about a company called Blue Kai. Now, this was a startup that tracks web data, and they were bought by Oracle for over $400 million. Now, Blue Kai basically reviews all traffic for something like less than 2% of the internet, which is a massive, massive amount of traffic to basically be tracking for web data. And they got billions of records from Fortune 500 companies, from governments, from everything exposed, due to their incident. And so that obviously is a huge, huge problem, you know, that the world has with web tracking and data mining and all of that. But Blue Kai got basically the Fortune 500s and the governments of the world hit in a single breach. Moving on, let's stick with June and talk about Digital Management Inc., or DMI. They actually do managed IT and cybersecurity for outfits like NASA and SpaceX. They were actually attacked by the Doppelpayer ransomware gang, who publicly on the dark web exposed HR records, documentation, all this kind of stuff from NASA and SpaceX and all of that. This was right around the time that SpaceX was launching that rocket into space, and Doppelpaymer on their leak site actually congratulated SpaceX for that and said, oh, by the way, pay us. We have all of your data. Moving on, and sticking in June, March and June were our crazy years, we had a company called Wattpad. Now, this is actually a publishing website for user-generated stories. They basically got hit, and 268 million records were sold on the dark web in an identity theft forum. That is where they figured out that they were insecure and since locked it down. But if you use Wattpad, that obviously was a very huge problem that you had, because 268 million records of people that were self-publishing or trying to get out into the publishing world got hit. And that is unfortunate. But we are not done. Moving forward to October, basically we have BroadVoice. Now, this is a voice over IP vendor, and they're very interesting because they have 2 million voicemails that were exposed as they were storing these voicemails. 200,000 of these were transcribed, not to mention basic PII, personally identifiable information such as emails, etc., was hit. So you could basically, due to an unsecured server, go and listen to 2 million voicemails live on the internet or read 200,000 transcriptions of that. That obviously is a very serious issue on their end, and hopefully they're going to get that straightened out if they haven't already. I believe it's locked down, but the damage is already done. And finally, and I'm not going to dive into a massive amount, and we do have a bonus after this, but this by far, and this hit in December, is the worst data breach and is possibly the worst data breach of all time. I will get more deeply into that in the deep dive segment, which is all about this. But we are going to be talking about, in our next segment, SolarWinds, which is a huge IT software vendor used by major companies and governments worldwide. I'm about to give you a complete timeline, what we found, everything on this, because this is probably one of the most damning things to happen to cybersecurity and the internet in the history of the internet. And like I said, I will be diving in to that as well. And so I wanted to end this segment with an honorable mention. It's not necessarily a breach, but it kind of is. And that is the top passwords for 2020. Essentially, an organization goes ahead and collects all of these passwords. And so they basically collected over 275 million exposed passwords on the dark web, put them into a database and said, okay, show me the amount of hits that I'm getting per password, how many times it's been exposed and all of that. And so these are the top 2020 passwords that you and I and everybody else were using. And I'm going to give you the top 10 or 11 or so. The first one is 123456. It's the same password you have on your luggage, if you know that reference. Over 2.5 million users of those 275 million were using this as a password. It takes less than 1 second to crack it. And that password was exposed 23.6 million times in 2020. That is insane. The next password is a little bit more aggressive than 123456 because it's 123456789. You think you're being smart, but 961,000 of you were using that, again, less than a second to crack, and 7.8, almost 7.9 million exposures on the dark web for that password. Number three is actually new to the list from last year. It wasn't in the top 10 from last year, and that is all lowercase, the word picture with the number one. Picture one was a new password on the honorable mentions list here. 371,000 of you had that. That actually takes 3 hours to crack, if you're assuming you're brute forcing, meaning you don't know that there's a word in there, and basically 11,190 exposures of that during that period. Number four is password, all lowercase. Your password is password. 360,000 of you have that, less than a second to crack, and 3.8 million exposures. Number five is very much like number one or two, and that's 123456789. 322,000 of you had that, 2.9 million exposures. Number six is 111111. Really, I've seen that like forever. 230,000 people were using that, and 3.1 million exposures. Number seven is 123123. You think you're getting clever. You're really not. 189,000 of you thought that. 2.23 million exposures to basically that password. 12345 rounds out at number eight. That was last year's number one, interestingly enough. So it went down eight spots because apparently 123456, which was last year's number two spot, is now number one, or I should say 2019's number one. So there you go. Absolutely crazy. But 12345 in 2020 had 188,000 users using it for 2.38 million exposures. And number nine, which was formerly number 11, is 123456789 0. Also takes less than a second to crack, for the record. It's so easy to calculate these things. It really is. 171,000 users to 2.3 million exposures. This one's brand new. Number 10 is actually brand new. I've not heard this. I don't know where this comes from. I have not Googled it. It is all lowercase, and it is the word Senha, S-E-N-H-A. Apparently 167,000 of you, almost 168,000, have this as your password. It takes about 10 seconds to crack, and basically 8,200 exposures. So, wow. And these are going by number of users, not number of times exposed by far. So, and number 11, and that will be the last one I give you, is actually 123456789. So basically coming from 12345 all the way up to 89 and 0, you have the entire gamut of the single digit spectrum here. 165, almost 166,000 of you have that, less than a second to crack, obviously, and 2.5 million of you, basically, or 2.5 million exposures of this. So this is absolutely bonkers. We need to do better with passwords. And so with that, those were your top breaches of 2020. Those were your top passwords, all horrible, for 2020 that have been exposed to the dark web tens of millions of times combined. And so, like I said, we can do better, but those were your breaches of the year. You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. I'm Nick Espinoza of the Deep Dive Radio Show, where we talk about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, broadcasting out of the Chicagoland area on WHIW 101.3 FM. And now for my interview with Congresswoman Robin Kelly.
Hey, everybody. Nick Espinoza, your chief security fanatic here. And today I have a very, very special guest with me. This is Congresswoman Robin Kelly. She is a representative of the great state of Illinois' 2nd District. I happen to be in Illinois, although not in your district. So thank you for joining me here. And
you're quite welcome.
Thank you. And we are going to be actually talking about a bill that she spearheaded, H.R. 1668, the Internet of Things, or IoT, Cybersecurity Improvement Act of 2020. Now, this was a bipartisan effort with apparently 26 co-sponsors, from what I understand. That's what I read.
I'm not quite sure the exact number, but I know that we had a good number and it was bipartisan, so that's thrilling.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. And it was passed by the House, the Senate, and President Trump signed it into law. So, so this is a huge win for, I think, the United States and the cybersecurity community, obviously, of which I'm part of. So, Representative Kelly, can you tell us more about the bill and what this is going to do for us as Americans?
Right. The bill ensures that the government only purchases secure or securable IoT devices. You know, as COVID-19 required a shift to digital work, this is more critical now to protect U.S. systems, to protect data and national security. So that's really the gist of it.
No, and that's great. That's great. And I think that's something that the U.S. government has generally been looking at, you know, overall. So, for example, the Department of Defense has the new cybersecurity maturity model certification that assures that supply chain that, you know, we're not sitting there allowing foreign governments to go ahead and monitor everything that we're doing. So I think that, you know, that's a really good thing. And I'm really glad it passed. And I wanted
It was a long time coming.
Yeah. From what I understand, it was March of 2019 that was when it started, right?
Well, Will Hurd was the chair of the IT subcommittee and I was the ranking Democrat. So this is when we were in the minority. And I actually brought it up to Will Hurd. Some of my staff has changed, but Matt had shepherded, Mac McMurray, my LD, has shepherded through. But I brought up to him about device vulnerabilities. This is something my staff had spoken to me about. And I think it's been like 3 years, actually, or something like that, that we've been working on it. Then we had a hearing, and then Senator Warner took it up in the Senate, and his partner was Senator Gardner. We've been, you know, working on it, going back and forth, you know, listening to everybody, it seems like, you know, about the bill, and then eventually, finally, you know, everybody got together, you know, everybody agreed, bipartisan, bicameral, and voila, we had the bill.
No, that's great. And also, I think it's really good to see that we can come together, you know, both sides of the aisle and actually pass something. You know, I like to say that cybersecurity is agnostic to politics, but we're definitely not immune from it, you know, in that way. But no, but it's great. It's just really great to see. I would like to shift gears, though, to the Senate as well, because we in the cybersecurity community, I'll be honest, we've been a bit dismayed over the last couple of years that multiple election security bills have basically been put to the, have not even been put to the floor, obviously by the majority leader, McConnell, Senator Mitch McConnell. Mm-hmm. Do you think that with an incoming Biden administration in power, we're going to start these bills, we're going to start seeing these bills pass the Senate, regardless of, you know, let's say the runoffs in Georgia, whatever that makeup is?
Right. I'm sorry. I am really hoping that because of President-elect Biden's long time association and relationships with the various senators that are still there and worked with him and know, you know, what kind of person he is, that does reach across, that there will be a warming, I'll put it like that, for some of these bills, you know, cybersecurity, and I can name, you know, many others, because we sent many bipartisan bills over to the Senate that have not been handled. And I'm hoping that with a few little changes, it's a little tighter, you know, that will make a difference also. But people want us to move forward, you know, and we know how important cybersecurity is, you know, national security, our elections, I mean, on and on and on.
Right. And I think we just as a nation have a lot of different issues with that. You know, I don't care if you're a CEO or a grandma in Idaho or, you know, wherever you are and in between, we constantly see our data get hit, you know, whether it's the corporations that house our data or, you know, the US government, whatever that is. And so, you know, and just coming through a rather contentious election, which I think we can all agree was indeed contentious, you know, it's one of those things that I think, you know, as we are resuming or trying to rebuild confidence in the electoral process, you know, that we have, but, you know, better cybersecurity just integrated right out of the gate. You know,
definitely. And I do think it's something that no matter, you know, what state you represent, or, you know, if you're in Congress or in the Senate, that people are, you know, they want security. You know, I do believe that most members feel like that, no matter who you represent or where.
Right. Right. Well, and I think, you know, like everything, we're herd immunity for COVID. We're all in cybersecurity together, right?
That's
we're
right.
all protecting ourselves by not answering that phishing email that gets our friends on Facebook hit and all of that. And speaking of which, I think one of the things that the United States tends to be lacking is something that the European Union, the EU, put together and ratified in 2018, and that is their General Data Protection Regulations, or GDPR, that allows EU citizens the right to be forgotten, the right to handle their data, whether they're on Facebook or another platform. And I think that you know, if the United States had a GDPR here, whatever we wanted to call it, that seems like it would be in line with the Constitution's right to privacy. Mm-hmm. So as a representative of in Congress, what do you think about the U.S. passing a GDPR? Do we have a chance? We've seen this in California with the CCPA, and New York has their shield. Here in Illinois, as you know, we have the biometric, you know, regulations. But overall, as a national standard, do you think we have a shot at passing a GDPR?
You know, it's so hard to say, but I would say I think we have a better shot now maybe than we did a year ago or 2 years ago. And I think it would be important to hear from, you know, California, Illinois, New York, people that have put, or states that have put some things in place and have hearings about it. I'm no longer, you know, well, there's no more IT subcommittee. It's all under Rep Conley. It was merged together with his committee. But I think those are proved to be interesting hearings to get feedback.
What do you think would stop a GDPR from coming into play? I mean, if we have bipartisan support to protect IoT security for the U.S. government, mm-hmm. and we've got the DoD ensuring their supply chain is no longer going to be stolen by state-sponsored attackers, what do you think it would take for the government, the federal government, to spin that up for the citizens?
You know, some of my colleagues, they believe in, you know, small government, stay out of our way, and also they believe in more state rights. So, you know, I don't know if they would feel like each state needs to do something, which, you know, we've found with different pieces of legislation and different issues, that doesn't make sense, you know, to have 50 different, you know, systems, that one system would be easier. But really, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if it would be a state right thing. My colleagues talk about that often. Mm. But it's hard to say.
It is.
This last 4 years has me, you know, sometimes I don't know what people are going to think or why they're going to do what they do.
Yes. The last million years in the last 4 years, I think, is the consensus for quite a bit. I mean, the way I think we look at it here, just in the American cybersecurity community, is that it dovetails with the constitutional right to privacy. And so as our privacy moves online, or, you know, as we start, I don't know, colonizing the moon, wherever it is, our privacy goes with us, whether we're in cyberspace or physical space. And by virtue of that, I'd actually like to jump gears again and talk about some recent news that we heard. My colleague Chris Krebs, who ran the CISA, which is obviously the cybersecurity wing of the Department of Homeland Security, was recently fired by President Trump after he disputed the president's claims. And Chris Krebs said this was the most secure election from a cybersecurity standpoint in the history of the United States. Now, by virtue of that, there have been some public calls that we've seen in the media to basically have his position, or his former position, I should say, or a very similar position, essentially be appointed and confirmed by Congress so that a president could not unilaterally dismiss who is ostensibly the head of cybersecurity for the entire U.S. government. And I'm very curious to know what your thoughts are on that entire situation, and if a position like that is actually tenable, you know, to be passed or ratified.
Well, first of all, it's absolutely ridiculous that he got fired. And you would think that someone in charge — I've never been the president, but I've been the chief of staff and in charge of things. And like right now, I want my staff to feel like they can tell me the truth, whether it's something I really want to hear or not. But if it's the truth, then it's going to help me do my job better, or just to be more aware of what's needed. I would want to hear that. And the thing is, because it's been President Trump, I think we need to look at a lot of different things. But do we change everything because of him? I'm hoping, and not trying to be disrespectful, that he was more of an anomaly, you know, because there are a lot of things we thought were safe and secure that now it doesn't, you know, we have to look back and question, you know. But I wouldn't be opposed to it being an appointment. But before we jump to doing that, we need to come to the table, talk about it, talk about the pros and cons. Because unfortunately, even though we get along better than people think, but also things have been so politicized, you know, I feel like it really started going the wrong way under President Obama, and it's just gone, you know, from the way that I saw that he was treated, you know. So I wouldn't mind the conversation around it, but I just want to make sure we're not, because of what has happened, we're not jumping to change everything. But and I would like his opinion too, what he thinks about it.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good position to take. You know, I've written multiple articles for Forbes or Smirkanish of CNN. I write for both, and we seem to have this bifurcation going on. You know, not just on the political divide of right versus left, but even on social media platforms. And how do you, as a nation, come together? I mean, it's just very heartwarming to me to see that. I think something that is beyond important to the security of this country had overwhelming bipartisan support. I don't know what the complete vote total was of all 435 members, but I have to imagine there were very few people that probably opposed what I think is a very
obvious. It was not opposed at all.
Yeah, so that's amazing, right? We don't hear about those things.
I know.
yeah, I think more people need to understand that it's not just pointing fingers and all of that, but go ahead, please.
No, I was going to say, the truth of the matter is, when we did have the IT subcommittee, Will Hurd and Mark Meadows, Jerry Conley, and myself, we worked together a lot on different, and they were the, as I always say, they drugged me along. You know, I was the average Jane or Joe on the street, and I learned so much from them, and especially from Will Hurd. I mean, being ex-CIA, he was really in, you know, to all of this. And So I learned a lot, and then I taught them a lot, because, you know, as you said, the nerd to English, you know, kind of thing, right, and what the average person thinks about or would want to know. So I feel like we really, I call us the Fantastic Four. We work together a lot, you know, around these issues and trying to modernize, you know, government and just different things like that.
Right. And I read the bill. You know, I went and looked at it, and I think it is pretty plain English. At least I understood it. You know, I think it's important that we have perspectives from all sides. You know, it's like buying that super expensive German automobile that was clearly made by engineers and takes you 40 steps just to turn a radio station. You know, like we don't need that in our lives. I think we need, hey.
There are toys like that too.
Right. There are, you know, and so it's hey, we're buying IoT devices. We want to make sure we've got a standard for security so that we are keeping the government secure, mm-hmm. as, you know, as well as the general public. And I think you are doing a great service by passing bills like that. So
thank you.
Yes. And so Representative Kelly, thank you very much. And if people want to learn more about you or follow you or anything else, are there any places or Twitter or anything you'd like to plug?
RobinKelly.gov. They can go on and you know, and of course, and just Google me, Congresswoman Robin Kelly, and mm-hmm. and all sorts of stuff pops up.
Fair enough. All good, I hope. All good.
Oh yeah, and at Robin Kelly, yeah.
Great. Well, Representative Kelly, thank you so much for your time. It is greatly appreciated.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to take you up on your offer.
All right. Thank you. Okay.
Take care.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show with Nick Espinoza. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Brian David at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Ruddenberg. Her email is ursula@pacifica.org. Again, that's ursula@pacifica.org. Again, I'm Nick Espinoza here in Chicago. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on your radio. Your spot for Cajun and Zydeco music. Bon ton roulette.